I wish BuzzFeed would bully me into quitting Twitter. Shit.
Oh my gosh. Yo, sign me up for that. My only goal is to be written about so that I can be bullied off of Twitter.
I'm going
to
tweet that later.
Hey everyone, welcome to the last episode of Am I Allowed to Like Anything for 2017. I'm your host, Darian Simone Harvin, and I'm closing out the year talking with Ira Madison III. Ira is a culture writer at the Daily Beast and formerly of BuzzFeed and MTV News. So I talk with Ira about growing up in Milwaukee and what that was like, traveling the world at a young age, the soaps that he grew up watching with his family, and we also dig into our favorite people, television, and songs of 2017. We also end up talking about the remake of Spike Lee's She's Gotta Have It, which we didn't particularly like, but we use it as a way to talk about how and why we are entering a space in culture where it's becoming more okay to critique Black art openly and more publicly. If you love this episode, rate Am I Allowed to Like Anything on iTunes and also subscribe. Check out my Drip page with Kickstarter in this podcast description to see how you can contribute to the making of Am I Allowed to Like Anything. And you can always tweet me at Darian Simone to let me know what you think about this episode. Let's get into it. 10, 9, 8,
7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You know what I think a lot about? Performance. Yeah. On Twitter, on social media platforms, and I feel like I'm always asking
myself. We're all performing.
That's what I'm fucking saying.
It's wild when some people call people like performative. It's like everybody's
performing.
You're doing this for an audience.
Exactly. But like, I think the thing with me is like, when you are exposed to the different ways that people are performing, it instead of it making me want to perform, it makes me just want to like curl up into myself and not say anything. That's why like I really struggle with my Twitter. Like I struggle with really like figuring out how to articulate how I feel on Twitter. I don't know. It's a weird space for me. I mean, I've been in this space for a long time too.
These social media editors are out here just doing it.
So, Ira, I'm trying to figure out, like, well, obviously, I have been following you on Twitter, like, obviously, right? And I don't want to make this podcast about me, but I need to know, number one, how and why did you start following me? Because I just thought, like, maybe randomly it was because of my podcast. Or, like, sure, like, the BuzzFeed plug is cool, too. But when I asked you to be in my podcast, you were like, oh, I didn't even know you had a podcast.
No.
And I was like, I wasn't even offended in a way where I was like, you know, I was just like, oh, I just assumed that he knew that I had, and I thought that that was the reason why you had like talked to me about Keep It for Crooked Media, that you're the podcast that you're doing. So could you just tell me this first? Because I really genuinely need to know.
Now, I like made it a point when I was at BuzzFeed to like follow the dope BuzzFeed Black.
Thank you so much.
Yes, because I always wanted to support them. When they left.
How long did you work at BuzzFeed?
Like a year.
Okay. It was a different... I feel like we worked at BuzzFeed at different times and eras and...
There have been so many eras.
Did you do one of those videos? I felt like you did a post that was like why I left BuzzFeed.
I didn't.
You didn't?
I did a jokey one.
Oh, you did
a joke tweet
one.
About
okay.
it.
Okay, okay.
Because the people were always making why I left BuzzFeed videos.
And that
I
was, like...
And I made like a ridiculous one. I was like, "What?" I forgot what I tweeted. Because if it was in 2016.
You were like coming soon or something.
Oh, yes,
like
coming soon. But yes, it never actually came.
Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Of course.
How did you grow up and what was life like for you? I know that you grew up in Milwaukee because I read that. But what was it like?
Let's see. You know, Milwaukee is, Milwaukee is actually not as white as like most people assume. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like a Detroit, or like, you know, like a, it closely resembles that in that, you know, there's suburbs, you know, where sort of like white people fled in the 70s and 60s when people started moving north and black people started working in like the packing industry and stuff. You know, my city was just sort of like, I lived in the city, so mm-hmm. it was sort of like a nice, normal, you know, like black inner city upbringing for a while until probably middle school.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any brothers or sisters?
I have a younger sister.
Okay.
2 years younger.
Okay, cool.
And so after that, then I went to, but I always went to like very good schools too. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a school I went to named Golda Meir for third through fifth grade, which was a very ethnically diverse school. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was also, you know, the kind of school where like in fourth grade, one of our teachers had us learn Danish and we went to Denmark.
Do you know Danish?
I did then.
Okay.
but we went to Copenhagen for 2 weeks.
Whoa!
In fourth grade.
2 weeks.
And then, and then fifth grade, our teacher, we learned French and we went to Canada. So we went to Montreal and Quebec. And so those kind of schools. And then
he was going to those kind of schools.
Yes. But still this like very ethnically diverse school. You know, like the school was like 60%, I don't know, like 60% or maybe like 45% black, a large percent Latino and Asian, and then white students as well. So it's like, you know, it wasn't like a bougie white school.
Yeah, it wasn't like you were the only white kid in your, or the only black kid in your class.
I was the only white kid, often, often I am. So I was not the only one, you know, and it wasn't like I was the only black kid going to Denmark, you know, there were other ones in my group with me.
Yeah.
So such an interesting experience, I guess, because it wasn't like I was also, you know, like, upper class. My family wasn't upper class. We're from a working class family in Milwaukee. So it's, you know, through scholarships and like through, you know, the kind of schools that I was able to go to, and my parents really pushing me, you know, to like focus on like my studies and stuff to get into those kind of schools that afforded me those benefits. Mm-hmm. Even though I was not really a school person.
I was not a school person. I am not a school person.
I could test to get into those schools, but then when I got to the schools, like, I didn't give a fuck about school.
I was like, yeah. I mean, I make good grades, but.
Yeah. So then I went to Marquette High School, which is this college prep, all boys, all white school in Milwaukee. And that was my first big exposure to, you know, like.
Racism, do you?
The whites. I don't even know that much. There wasn't that much racism, to be honest. Probably, like, if I could go back and relive it, I would notice, like, microaggressions.
Right. That was my experience,
right. too. But it wasn't, but there was nothing overt, like, you know, I wasn't having to give, like, Taraji's speech in Hidden Figures to go to the bathroom, you know? And so, but that school attested very well to get into as well. And that school, I went to Paris with my French class. We went to Canada again. Just all sorts of like.
So if I go on your Facebook, do you have like albums from when you? Well, Facebook may have not even been.
No,
around.
Facebook wasn't even invented until I was in college.
Yeah, I want to see the disposables. I'm not kidding. We're gonna need some of that for content. There was something you said about your upbringing in the piece you wrote about Moonlight, which is essentially like your review of Moonlight.
Mm-hmm.
You said black men are supposed to learn masculinity from their fathers. So in his absence, I learned mine from the media I consumed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just thought that that was like such a good sentence to talk about your...
Thank you.
Oh. Oh my God. Okay, Beyonce on the fucking View. I can't stand you.
And you are Ira. Thank you.
I just thought that it was a good place to, I want to dive deep into like what you were obsessed with in consuming while you were going to these schools, like, what was the TV you were watching? What were you obsessed with?
Soap operas.
Okay, Denver. Okay,
like, owner. Everyone knows that I'm always yeah. tweeting about soap operas, but it's like I literally grew up on them.
Was your mom watching them?
Or my like? Mom watched Days of Our Lives briefly, but then I would watch like nighttime soaps with my mom. Like, I would watch Melrose Place, 90210, Charmed. Then she got into like The Sopranos. My grandmother watched Young and the Restless. And Bold and Beautiful, mm-hmm. and my extended family did too. So whenever, like, Thanksgiving, Christmas, you know, like holidays, family gatherings, mm-hmm. you know, if it's daytime, you know, and we're all in the house and you're a kid, like, the adults are watching their soap.
Okay.
You know, which seems like wild that people still do that now, but also this was like the 90s.
Right.
You know, so like that was the height of soap operas.
Right. Like, I would come home from school, and at the time, my mom was, she was raising, and she was a stay-at-home mom. And at that time, I'd come home, and she was watching Young and the Restless.
Yeah. You know, and
a lot
of black people watched Young and the Restless, too, because it had a very prominent black family on it.
Mm-hmm.
And Victoria Rowell, you know, contributed a lot to her character. So, it, you know, the characters felt authentically black, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like a lot of black families were drawn to The Young and the Restless.
I had a feeling that you were going to say that because you saying, like, your MTV bio owns 51% of Devon Carrington. I had to Google that. And I watched that clip. I just want you to know.
Did you?
Yeah, because at first I thought that Devon Carrington was maybe like a person, and you were saying that like you like own.
So I'm very into slavery. Yeah, is what you thought.
Yeah, and I was like, okay, fuck. But you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
But then I found the clip, and I was like, oh, he's a bad bitch.
Right. Okay. So this is when you talk about like the media, you know, I guess I consumed. There weren't a lot of black men in the media, you mm-hmm. know, and so. A lot of the times, you know, especially as a gay person, you know, I was just probably just drawn to stronger female characters in media
mm-hmm.
Or, you know, like men who are like dastardly, like on soaps, you know, like
yeah.
the kind of like
yeah.
the ones who would like screw you over and steal your company, those kinds of ones with the good one-liner.
Yeah.
And I come from a very, and it wasn't just that I didn't have a dad, I come from a very female populated family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was my mom, my grandmother, my aunts, my great grandmother. The only really men in my life were my cousins, some cousins on the side, and my dad's father, who was oddly still a part of our life, even though my dad wasn't. So him. But then he moved to Vegas at some point too, because he was tired of living in Milwaukee winters. Which I don't blame him.
Fair.
I'm
trying to get my dad to move back to LA right now. My dad lives in Buffalo, where I'm from.
You know, so those were the women I grew up around too. Mm-hmm. You know, so you know, I was drawn to that in the soaps and like stuff I watch, and I also watch like, action adventure stuff because like you know black families watch like kung fu and like you know like action movies and mm-hmm. shit.
Yeah.
So, I would also drawn to, you know, like shows like Alias or like, you know, like the Matrix, like old, you know, Bruce Lee movies, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, so I just feel like maybe the people and the media that influenced me were all sort of just like over the top.
Yeah,
I guess
let's
just like over the top, dramatic, bad bitches, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
you talking about kind of the kinds of characters that you were drawn to in soaps, it made me, I don't know why, in just like how dramatic they are, it made me think about She's Gotta Have It.
Mm-hmm.
And have you watched any of it?
I watched the first two.
Okay, I watched the first two as well. And I don't know, I think there's something about like some of the men who are just like very, very dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I'm just curious of what you thought of She's Gotta Have It.
She might, but I don't. I did not like it.
Me either.
That's why I didn't keep watching. I was sick Thanksgiving weekend too. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I could watch this, because I hadn't gotten around to watching the screeners that they had sent me. And I was like, oh, I could watch this. And then I watched like the first two episodes and I was like, this is not for me.
Right.
And I was like, you know what? What's up with this show, The Crown? I had never watched it. So now I was like, let me marathon this shit while I'm sick. And then I got hooked and I was like, this.
Now that's dramatic. Right.
See, and that's, you know, that's all I want. You know, like, it's not like I'm trying to pick the white show. But, you know, it's like, fuck The Crown. Can they give us like Nefertiti? Yes. I would love I love the actress and she's got to have it.
Yes, I agree.
She's amazing. So if I got to see her, you know, like walking around in like Nefertiti? Egyptian headdresses
and
like pyramids and like the same kind of shots and everything you get on The Crown and all this like sumptuous, like, you know, cinematography, I would watch that. But I'm not trying to watch Spike Lee in this like bad relationship drama that seemed like it was written by nobody under 30. Nobody under 40. You know, I was like, this felt so throwback in a weird way. I was like, I don't know who this woman is. I've never interacted with, like, even the scenes where like the four girlfriends were all like hanging around and talking and stuff. It felt so phony.
Right.
I was like, I've never been at a brunch like this.
I've never spoken any of those words.
Yes. You know, I was like, where's the tea?
Yeah. And like, you know, something I think a lot about Spike's work and I think that you would probably have a better perspective on it just because of the writing that you do. But I was talking to my girlfriends about Spike's work. And I think that when Do the Right Thing came out, it was such a darling movie because it was the right moment.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
You know, and it like catapulted Spike Lee into this space where like, I'm not also sure if he really faced the kind of criticism that he always should have for all of his films.
Well, and that's the problem too, with like, it's hard to critique so many of our black artists from the 90s and earlier periods, just because the criticism just really wasn't up to snuff.
Right.
You know, it's white critics so many times just because like, you know, it looked good and it made them feel something.
Mm-hmm.
Would be like, oh, this is great, you know, not like so many of them did with Chirac. I'm like, that movie is whack, you know? And it's so many of them, you know, just sort of lack the tools to critique black art, or they do it, you know, with kids' gloves. And it's...
Kids' gloves.
You know, so it's like we don't have really that basis of being like, is this good? Is that? And I like social media, because it's giving black people voices. You see what black people really think of She's Gotta Have It, of Dear White People, of other things that are on TV now. Like, you get to see what actual black people are thinking about them, and we're in this weird place now where it's, you know, it's not jiving with, you know, what so many white critics will write about things, where they're like, oh, this is amazing and it's beautiful. And then, like, people will be like, oh, no, it wasn't. You know? And I feel like we didn't really want to do that to Spike Lee back then, because it's like, then we're not going to get other black filmmakers now. But now we've reached a point where it's like, we can push for more black artists, but we can also call out black artists when they make, you know, bad work, you know?
Yeah.
And luckily the best like black people in the game right now are making really exciting work, you know, like Ava and like Ryan Coogler, and you know, we can acknowledge that. I'm blanking on dude's name who made Dope. Which got mixed reviews. I enjoyed it. Some people did not like it.
Yeah, it did get mixed reviews.
But, you know, I at least, I liked that, you know, like, a brother put out work that was good.
And it got recognition.
And it got recognition, but we could also critique it and be like, this didn't work for me, or it did work for me, you know?
Yeah.
Even Moonlight got its share of, you know, I feel like, critiques. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I just like what we're doing. You
yeah,
know?
I agree. And I think, like, talking about the social media aspect of black people just sharing their perspective, what made She's Gotta Have It so interesting for me in the different, like, I just felt like the reviews really varied, mm-hmm. was that it was a film that was redone into a series by a film director that was not always properly critiqued, in my opinion.
No.
And so I don't often feel like young, like, people in their 20s and 30s fully have, like, the context.
They have such a reverence for
Spike Lee that now it's like, what are we supposed to think about this?
Right.
And me, I'm like, this is fucking whack, dude. Like what's right. what's happening?
I'm trying to think of, like, a white equivalent, you know, because it's like, I'm, you know, because there are so many people who work, like, we reevaluate now because it's just like, you know, they weren't really that wild, you know?
I don't know. So,
like, Quentin Tarantino is starting to get critiques now, you know, because it's like we recognize, like, the stuff that he did that was great, but now it's like we can also call it out when, like, some of his shtick isn't working. And he was perfect for that time, you know, and he made, you know, like Pulp Fiction is great, you know, mm-hmm. and like Jackie Brown and like Kill Bill. But now it's like Hateful Eight, and you can be like, you know, like Inglourious Bastards, I love, except for, you know, like, I don't love all the stuff with the Bastards. Like, mm-hmm. I would have preferred, like, you know, just like a quiet, like, that French movie with then her getting the revenge on the Nazis. It's stuff like that where you can critique white art in a way that I think that we're now critiquing black art, which is enjoyable.
Yeah. So. I've started wearing a new pair of headphones by Studio, and I've partnered with them to give all of my listeners 15% off. Studio wants to revolutionize the way that people see headphones as not just a tech device, but also an accessory. Right now, the headphone market can offer you one of two things, tech or style. Fashionable headphones tend to lack the proper sound quality, and high-tech variations are bulky and not design-oriented. Studio wants to bridge that gap while emphasizing modern Scandinavian design. They sent me a pair of The Regent, which is an on-ear model. With 24 plus hours of active battery life and 20 days of standby life, The Regent is the perfect companion for at home or on the go. It will connect to any device that has Bluetooth, but there is also an auxiliary cord if you don't want to use the wireless option. You can also personalize your Regent interchangeable caps with white or black marble design. Am I Allowed to Like Anything users will receive 15% off by plugging in AIATLA at checkout, and the link is in this week's episode description as well. All right, let's get back into this episode. You went to NYU, was it for grads?
It was for graduate school.
And you went for dramatic writing.
Yes.
And I'm curious to know,
that's playwriting and screenwriting.
Yeah. So going in, was that your intent and your pursuit was to pursue that, or was it to get into, like, what you're doing now?
No, it was to pursue that. Okay. In undergrad, I was a theater major.
Okay.
So I went fully with the intent of wanting to be a playwright.
Mm-hmm. Do you still want to?
I have not written a play in years, but I produced one here in L.A. like four, five years ago at this mm-hmm. point now. I'm working on a new one, so
really?
Yeah, we'll see. Friends of mine have been like, "Where's that new play?"
Where's that play?
But yes, no, playwriting and screenwriting are definitely things that are still, you know, in my repertoire. Mm-hmm. Things that are still in my plans for the future. Stay tuned. That was so dramatic. No, but you know, I've been talking to people about, you know, developing yeah. those things
yeah.
again. I really just sort of fell into this sort of writing, and I feel like my studies helped, you know, because right. I was a theater major and like I did film, and you know, it's like in school you have to, you know, critique, you know, so many of the things that you read and write, you know, and you sort of have to become like a theater scholar, a film scholar. And luckily I was doing a school for television writing too. So it was like you became a television scholar. So, you know, you're thinking about these mediums that you want to write in, but, you know, putting like a gravitas on them that like a lot of people don't afford them. And so I just got so used to sort of writing about these things mm-hmm. that I love writing about them now.
Mm-hmm.
And, I tend to think of myself as like a culture writer instead of a culture critic
mm-hmm.
just because, you know, I know the thing where it's like, you know, like some critics are just like, oh, you know, this person's a critic because they really just want to be a screenwriter, you know, and stuff. But I feel like I don't really write pieces that are like reviews, you know. I don't write I don't write pieces where it's like, this is good, this is bad. That's very, you know,
true. Yeah,
my pieces, I always try and find something, like a kernel of something in whatever I'm writing about, and use it as a way to either relate to my own life or to society at large. You know, mm-hmm. I feel like I write essays about cultural moments and movies and TV and music are cultural moments, you know? So that's what I do. And I think that lends itself to the kind of playwriting and the script writing that I do as well, because, you know, I try and, you know, do like an exegesis of culture.
Yeah. I really actually want to talk about a piece that you've written, could have been whenever, that you're really proud of, or maybe at that moment was a milestone for you. Like, I could talk about your work in essays that I've enjoyed, but
thank you.
But tell me for you, and maybe it was a turning point into good exposure or visibility, or maybe it was just, it like intellectually it was a milestone for you into what you could produce.
Oddly enough, it probably wasn't my Moonlight piece. It was, I think it was my La La Land piece, where it talked about, you know, sort of the white jazz narrative in that. Because that piece was then, I mean, one, copied by a lot of people who didn't link back to my piece. But a lot of people did link back to it, you know? And I felt like I was actually one of the first people who had a piece that sort of critiqued that aspect of La La Land, and then it became like a narrative through the rest of like the run, and other people going off of that, because I feel like my piece did so well. So I was very proud of that, and I feel like that piece was the first piece where, you know, I really sort of came into, you know, people starting to respect the work that I had been doing online and writing about things. But MTV definitely was, because I was at Vulture before then, which is a great website, you know, but the pieces that I was writing there weren't the pieces that I'm writing now, you know, and I'm grateful for MTV for giving me that opportunity to sort of cement who I was as a writer to people, because if I was at Vulture, I don't even know what kind of piece I'd still be, like, writing quick hits and stuff and trying to make them funny or interesting, and, you know, it's, that just wasn't me.
The grind of that, even like day to day, is really hard,
and it's hard doing it at the Daily Beast, you know, like writing like the pieces I do like multiple times in a week, you know, but it's, I much prefer that to, you know, the multiple quick hits a day, just trying to, like, here's 400 words on something, and it's like, oh, make it snappy, you know?
Which
works for some people, you know? And I had fun when I was doing it, but, you know, for what I have to say, it's just not enough.
Right.
Sometimes I do wish I could just write that 400 words, though. You know?
Right, sometimes and just you talk get your shit real
well,
quick.
Well, just sometimes you get an assignment, and it's like, I don't care about this, you know? You know, it is what it is, and you gotta roll with the punches.
Yeah.
And if...
So, we're getting to the time when people are rolling out their 2017 year-end best of content.
Yes.
And I actually was thinking this past week about how much I've grown to kind of, like, hate the holidays. And I feel like a cold person for saying this. This should be a time when, like...
Why?
Because I think I'm just so over the music.
Mariah's album, fine, you can be over it. Christina Aguilera's album is a jam. Most people don't acknowledge that My Kind of Christmas was a legend, a classic, a bop, an icon. Christmas and Chill by Ariana Grande. There's so many, just like, there are these deep cuts. You know, like, it's not always about Mariah's bops.
Yeah. And okay. But what I'm trying to say is, like,
I love the season.
I'm not into the season.
Buy some presents.
Maybe because, I don't know.
I don't buy presents for other people. I buy them for myself.
Yeah. No, I was talking to my friend.
I treat myself. You know,
I was just talking to my friend Siobhan, who is, Siobhan is the head of music and youth culture at Instagram. She's also like an amazing music artist herself. And we were talking about how like our families, I feel like in their heads, they think that we have money to buy them gifts. And it's like, no, I have money to get up to have an apartment and to put clothes on my back and to eat. No, and to go to brunch.
It's very wild.
Just because I know I got this
Cardi B quote, tweeted cool recently, I'm not buying no presents for adults. And I was like, you know what? That's me. I have a niece
that's
who I'm
going to
see at Christmas, and I will arrive home with a present for her. Nobody else?
No. You know what? That's my new rule.
Yeah.
That's my new rule.
Like, I'm, you know, we're planning a party for my grandmother, you know?
Oh, okay.
So, you know, it's like, that's her present.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like, I don't have the time.
Right. So, okay. So I said
I bought myself a present, okay? I'm going to Australia next year.
Amazing. Yeah. I have not been to Australia yet.
I haven't been either. So I planned myself a little.
Maybe
I'll take no vacation time this year either.
Whoa.
That's the grind.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me let y'all know what real grinding is.
I have a tweet
it's
I
not
pull
it's
up.
Not taking vacation time throughout the year so that when you are ready to take a vacation, you can take a vacation in bulk.
And they feel it when you're gone.
So it's like, oh, I have how many vacation days accrued? Okay, bye.
Yeah. Okay, so I like screenshotted this tweet. It's by Mylique Teal, who I actually really, really love. And she goes, how you work in your 20s sets the foundation for your life. Erase the mindset of chilling and give it all you have. Even though I do love to chill, and I've become very chill over the past 5 years. Anyway, she continues and she goes, use your 20s to create distance from your competitors who are busy, quote, chilling. It'll be impossible for them to catch up to you. That is extremely my shit right now.
Mm-hmm. And how old is this person?
She's like 30 something.
Mm-hmm.
So
what does she work?
She's a CEO. She's the creator of Curlbox, which is like...
She sounded like a black woman who runs a hair company.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Which works for them.
Yeah. No, for sure. It works for them. And
right.
We
have a bit more ups and downs in our industry.
Yeah. For sure. I'm like already burnt out, which is a part of the reason why... I needed to get myself in a new space.
Stay on your grind. Instagram posts.
In like the Target like quote like stickers that you can hang
buy
up
my
on your
relaxers.
Wall. Right. Oh my God, I hate you, Ira. Okay, but what I'm trying to say.
I really did ask because immediately when you were reading that, I was like, she sounds like a black woman who runs her own hair company.
Yeah, and she's making a lot of money doing it though.
I know. I support her.
I love
I wish I
Miley
could run my
Teal.
Own hair company.
I love
I
Miley
have
Teal.
No hair.
Out of all you don't
Listen, I keep it short too because the edge is starting to go. I just wish I could just go all the way bald.
Why can't you?
I don't know. It seems like a lot of work.
I'll research that and let you know.
Okay.
Why did I bring that up? I just brought it up because we were talking about vacation.
Yeah.
Okay. So talking about 2017, like content, it gets so annoying to me because there's so much of it. I do read the Faders year in content just because I like fuck with the Fader really hard. But like, what is your personal film of the year? I want to know your song of the year. Mm-hmm. And then I want to know your person of the year.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, my number one film of the year is Call Me By Your Name.
Everyone is saying this.
You know what? It's just...
Oh, no. They're talking about another movie.
It's a gay romp.
Okay.
I love it.
Okay, cool.
It has its faults, but it just makes me feel nice.
Nice.
When I watch it. And then I let out some tears. And it's whatever.
Cool.
You know, it's like scrolling through an ex's Instagram. In movie form.
In movie form.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
But like one who didn't like fuck you up, you know, like one who was like, oh, I miss that person, you know, but they're probably dead now. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't talk to my exes.
Same.
I actually saw one at a party.
Did you ignore them?
Yeah.
Good.
No.
You said hi. Okay. So you are human.
They were at the drink table and I walked over and said, I guess they were very lax with this invite list. Because you know what kind of person I am. I watch these soaps.
Right. None of this is should be surprising to anyone listening to this podcast at this point.
He took it as the joke that it was, though. Yeah. We laughed it off. Yeah. And then we didn't talk the rest of the night.
Cool. That sounds honestly ideal.
Yeah.
Song of the year. Oh, what's my film of the year? I didn't see enough movies this year, quite frankly, to even have one. It would be Moonlight, which would be the most cliche thing ever.
Get a movie pass.
That is what everyone is telling me.
Yeah, go get up in these movies.
Okay. And I'm going to come see movies with you. Oh, yeah. Well, you go to screenings. Never mind. You're like, okay.
I'm bougie.
Song of the year. As opposed to artist of the year.
I mean, the song of the millennium is Anywhere by Rita Ora.
Ira.
What?
I'm ready. No. I say that not with disdain, but with let's talk about Rita Ora, because I feel
her.
Like we bonded over this, because there are not many people who like love Rita Ora.
There was actually a really great tweet, and I'm paraphrasing it horribly now, but it was just sort of like, live your life like Rita Ora, you know, like constantly doing something and being in the press and working on a project and like nobody knows why.
I love Rita Ora. She has an amazing voice.
And Anywhere is such a good song, actually.
Yeah.
The sad thing is like it's charting everywhere but the U.S., but yeah. The U.S. is trash when it comes to pop music. Like, that's the only reason, you know, like this fucking Post Malone song is like number one. Yeah. I don't know what's going
on. Like, why is Georgia Smith not on? Well, I guess that's a little too like...
You know, I actually liked Despacito. I get that it was the song of the summer.
If anything, it's been really interesting to me, like, even just as an American, to like Despacito, like what's the joint with Beyonce and
Migante?
Yeah, Mi Gente. Yeah, like to see those songs, even Kodak Black, like songs that you know.
Bodak Yellow was lit.
Oh yeah, wait. What did I just say?
You said Kodak Black, the nigga.
Yeah, not
who
him.
She got it from. Bodak Yellow, Wild Thoughts. Like these are jams.
Yes.
But Anywhere just. It captures that spirit.
Yeah, but I just, it's like, it's nothing new, but it's exciting to me to kind of just like see these like global songs take on life in the U.S., you know?
Mm-hmm.
Who's your person of the year? Don't make it Colin Kaepernick.
Wow.
Because like
I did work on the GQ story.
Yeah, I know you did. So that's what I'm saying. You can't say. Oh my god. That's what I'm saying. You can't say him because you worked on the piece.
I'm trying to think of my person of the year. You know, it was close to being Armie Hammer, but BuzzFeed murdered him and now he no longer exists.
Oh my
resists.
Gosh. Yeah, why did Anne Helen Petersen do that?
She is reckless. I enjoy her. But sometimes white women are just reckless.
Oh my god! And people really defended him on Twitter.
I mean, at least he destroyed a white man. So
yeah,
and he didn't even really destroy him.
Yeah,
he's still rich.
In like living his life and breathing and shit.
Right.
Even though he like didn't he like get off Twitter after?
Yeah,
that?
And he got off Twitter, which like okay, congratulate that.
Yeah, that's actually good.
Wouldn't we all want to?
Yeah, absolutely. It's nothing I would want.
How many
more.
Among us?
Yeah, how many among us?
I wish BuzzFeed would bully me into quitting Twitter. Shit.
Oh my gosh. Yo, sign me up for that. My only goal is to be written about so that I can be bullied off of Twitter.
I'm going to tweet that later. My person of the year is always Rami.
Who?
Rami Malek.
Yeah.
He's my person of my life. I love him.
Oh.
Also, like, he's starring as Freddie Mercury in the Queen movie.
Yeah.
And Bryan Singer's ass got fired for being a mess.
Yeah.
Which is beautiful because I was already in such turmoil about not wanting to see the Queen movie because I didn't want to support Bryan Singer.
Yeah.
And now I don't have to worry about it. On the low, I was going to see the movie and just pretend I hadn't for a while.
Yeah.
And lie to people and see it multiple times because it starred my boo. But now I don't have to.
Now
so
it doesn't even matter.
Now I can be open and honest with my tweeps.
Yeah.
Do people still say tweeps?
I don't know.
Remember when like Kim Kardashian and other celebrities used to tweet every morning, people. Good morning tweets.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I kind of wish Kim would bring that back. So I have a plus one segment. Okay. What I call the plus one segment is where you talk to people about your person, place, thing, or experience you're loving right now. So it's separate than our year-end wrap-up content that we just did. But I told you that I wanted to call it the things we want to keep.
Just for this week.
Yeah.
Because it's me. Keep it.
Keep it.
Is my brand and also my forthcoming podcast from Crooked Media.
From Crooked Media.
Subscribe on iTunes.
I'm so excited.
Thank you.
How did that come to be? Did they come to you like, hey?
Well, so I had already done, I can thank MTV again. Mm-hmm. Because I was working with Anna Marie Cox at MTV, and then I did her Crooked Media show. Mm-hmm. And then I was literally at a party, and like the boys all followed me from Crooked Media after that episode. But I was at a party here in Hollywood, as you do, drinking some champagne,
right?
Whatever.
It was on Price,
And this guy was like, oh, I really loved you on Anna Marie's show. And I was like, oh, thank you so much. He was like, when are you going to do Love It or Leave It, John Lovett show? And I was like, I don't know. When's John Lovett going to invite me on his show?
Yeah.
You know, I was drunk. The next morning, Lovett DM'd me and was like, oh, my friend ran into you. Like, you should totally do the show. And I was like, oh, cool. And so then I ended up doing the show. Literally, I did it the night of my last day at MTV, and I was starting at the Daily Beast the next week. And after the show, like, it was great. I had so much fun, and you know, they were like, we really liked you. We would love to have you back on. We would love to talk about doing some sort of show with you.
Right.
And from then, like, you know, the beginning of June to now, it's come into beautiful fruition.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's a great story, honestly.
Thank you. You know, and I sort of cultivated Keep It online, and then it became like, oh, I can only call the show
this. Like, it honestly felt like a natural progression of that, like take it, like go with it, you know? I wish that you could, can you copyright Keep It? I feel like you can't, because it's like, but I want you to be able to do it.
Oh,
listen, honey, you need to get a canvas bag with Keep It on it.
51% of Keep It. No, there'll be the podcast. There will be merch. It'll be dope.
Yeah.
Oh my god,
I cannot wait.
And honestly,
I want to pin this as Keep It.
And honestly, you all see me on Twitter. Like, I am nothing if not a reliable catchphrase maker.
Yeah.
Because I had my column Delete Your Account and
made
it my own. And it's like, I'm just always trying to find like a new fun catchphrase to get these kids to give me their coins.
Yes.
I don't know.
Capitalism, but for black people.
Yeah.
Okay. So things we want to keep. Tell me one thing you really want to keep and that you don't want to get rid of and that you want to stay.
Obama. Was that dark?
That was dark. I just closed. Like, it wasn't dark. It was just, I just like, I got a little red in my face.
I miss him. You know, keep Omarosa employed by the Trump administration.
Okay. Expand on
that. She's just a mess, you know? And I love whenever a new Omarosa story pops up, you know? So,
I haven't seen one in a while.
You remember when she commandeered, you know, the White House for, like, the photos for her wedding?
Oh, my gosh. I heard about that. Yeah,
like, I love it. So.
And how she, she was supposed to do a panel at NABJ, but then when all of the other people who were on the panel realized that she was going to be on the panel, they dropped out.
Yeah, and then it turned into a fight. I love it. So, let's keep Omarosa. She's better than Stacey Dash anyway.
Okay. So, I don't know if that's true. I actually don't know. But anyways, I accept your keep.
Thank you.
So I feel like my plus ones are always so fickle, but whatever. I want a plus one lip plumping lip gloss right now, which I don't have any on of.
Is that Lisa Rinna's brand?
I don't know. It's like lip plumping lip gloss in general. Wait, who? Lisa
Rinna.
Oh my God.
You know.
The irony of this is that I have big lips and I don't need to be. Like, I have like great, beautiful, cool lips.
Just plump them up.
I just like the way it kind of, first of all, it gives you this tingling feeling that I kind of like. And
trussed up like a turkey.
Yeah. And so I just kind of want to shout out like lip plumping lip gloss right now, especially as like a beauty girl, someone who's like really into skincare and makeup. My friend basically like let me, like, she was like, you should try some of this. And after, I'll link to it in this episode. But it was like a Soap and Glory lip gloss that I really enjoy, and it makes my lips feel a little tingly and good, and it just plumps them a little.
Thank you so much. I will get that. And I'm kidding. I will not.
I kind of want. I'll bring it for next time we're together, so okay. You can. It's clear. You know what I mean. Even if it was a little sparkle, that'd be cute too.
Yeah, give it a little plump.
Ira, this was amazing. This is the first time we've ever met. I want people to know.
Yeah, I'm elusive. I'm sorry.
Why are you elusive?
I'm just kidding. Because They were like, first time we've ever met. Like, they don't know that, like, oh, you, I mean, unless they know, like, oh, you lived in New York and I live here. Yeah. And, like, no, you just moved here. Like, otherwise, It's like, I was just going with the mystery of, like,
where
I'm hiding in LA somewhere. I don't know.
We are kind of hiding in LA somewhere in the studio. I love it. Anything else you want to say to the people about what you're working on or where they can find you?
I'm at Ira on Twitter, and subscribe to Keep It on iTunes and Spotify.
Amen. We out.